So we are up to the song for Tuesday. We dealt with the song for Sunday and the song for Monday. So the original source for the song for these songs are these are the songs that the Levim sang. It was sung twice a day, every day when they brought a korban in the morning. They brought a sacrifice in the morning and in the evening. So they would say it twice a day, and it's a specific praise. These are all from Tehillim. But it's a specific praise that relates to that day. So we want to have something specific for each specific day. We only do it in our own tefillah. We only do it in the morning. We don't do it in the evening, partially because we're afraid that it's going to get to the next day, because by the time we have the mincha prayer, so that's already, that could be later on in the day, so we're afraid that you're going to end up saying it for the next day because the day starts at night. So for various reasons, we don't say it at night, but we only say it during the day. But each day, we want to have a specific thanks or acknowledgement of what God did for that day. I think what... It's open. It should be open. Okay. Thank you.
Sign on the door.
We don't want a sign on the door. We don't want the bad guys to know they can come straight in.
Morning. So we dealt with the song for Sunday and the song for Monday. I think what's also fascinating about this is that as we go through it, some of these songs really, at first glance, have nothing to do with the first day of creation, the second day of creation, the third day of creation. So it's interesting to see how Chazal, how the rabbis saw a connection between the two. And I think it also tells us something which is really fundamental about the day. I mean, you always have to ask, what is this concept of the 7 days of creation? Where does this concept come from? So a lot of these ideas are beyond us, especially in Parshas Bereishis. It's very difficult to understand. Why did God specifically have to have 7 days of creation? There's a whole question whether it's even actually 7 days. Actually, days, 24-hour days. For example, how do we get to the concept of a 24-hour day? How do we know that there's 24 hours in a day? Or the halachic day really starts when the sun comes up, and then the next day is when the sun comes up again, right? We have the cycle of the sun and the moon. So that's really how to define what a day is. Without the sun and the moon, you can't really define what a day is.
Sun goes down, that's the next
day. Okay, yeah. Wait, you're right. When the sun goes down, you're right. It starts at night. When the sun goes down, so that's the beginning of the day, and then the next day starts when the sun goes down. You're right.
Actually, that's very confusing. Why would a day begin when it's night?
Okay, so that's also a fascinating question, which we're not going to get to now, but that is an important question. It's not true for all aspects. There are some halachas where the day starts by day. It's a little more complicated than that. But maybe one day we'll get to it. So if it goes based on the sun going down, right, the cycle between the sun and the moon, so how are these exactly 7 days? When was the sun created? On the fourth day. So was it actually days for the first 3 days? Could these actually be days? If days are defined by the sun and the moon, how do we have days? So it's unclear whether these are actually 24-hour day periods, or whether these are just representing certain ideas or certain changes within the world. These are fundamental differences and different changes so that it constitutes a day. Because otherwise
and all,
it's...
And everybody in the world agrees it's 7 days. How did that happen?
Not everyone in the world agrees it's 7 days.
No?
I'm not sure if I think it's 7 days.
But wasn't creation on 6 days and God rested on the seventh?
So it's unclear exactly whether these are literal days or not. Well, whether these are time periods,
if they're time periods.
These could
God
be time
created
periods.
on the six time periods and rested
on
the seventh
time period. Time period doesn't necessarily mean a day.
I know, but you're talking about creation as being 7 days. I'm thinking of it as being 6 days or six time
yeah,
periods.
Yeah, well, so the seventh day, it's a question whether God created the concept of rest on Shabbos, or whether he just didn't create. That's a question. Whether it's whether it's the seven
it's
days.
It's not working, it's just creating.
Okay, I think you're going to have to stay all day so we can have some answers.
We're going to have the seventh day. For the seventh day, we're going to have a song for the seventh day. So on Sunday and Monday, we dealt with the first 2 days of creation. So what do the first 2 days of creation represent? The first day of creation, we discussed, the song for the first day of creation was about really what the purpose of the world is. What was the purpose of the world? And that's what we dealt with for the first day of creation, which is about, what's the phrase? That at the very beginning, before anything is created, you first have to have the purpose. You have to have the purpose in mind. What's the goal in mind? And then you can start creating. You first have to have that ultimate goal in mind. And so that's what day one is about. Day one is about just setting our goals in mind. Day two was the separation of the waters. That's what happened on day two, the separation of the waters. And we discussed, not last week, but 2 weeks ago, that the separation is about different purposes in each, not everything's equal. That each part of creation and in an extension, each part of the world, specifically Yerushalayim as opposed to the rest of the world, that's what that song was about. Each part has its own purpose, and that Yerushalayim has a higher level of holiness to it than other parts of the world. And it's trying to emphasize the idea that even though not everything's equal, everything has its own purpose, and God has a certain purpose for all of creation. And so everything has to be separated. There's different, separate but equal. There's a separation, and there's a role that each part of creation, each area, each land, plays in the world. So today we'll deal with the song for Tuesday. So what happened on the third day of creation? What was created on the third day? The land. The land was created on the third day. So the land was created on the third day. So let's now see the second source. Before we get to the actual Perek in Tehillim, which is a short one, let's see the second source on page one. Do you want me to move it? You got it? The second source on page one is the Talmudic source for all of these. For every single day, it tells us what we're saying and why we say it. So it says, "B'shlishi hayu omrim Elokim nitzav badas kel al shem shegila aretz bechachmaso vehechen tevel leeduso." On the third day of creation, we read this parak of Tehillim of Elokim nitzav badas kel. This is chapter 82 in Tehillim. Why do we say it? Because he revealed the land in his wisdom. He revealed the land in his wisdom on this day, and thereby prepared the world for his assembly, that they can now live on the dry land. That he prepared the land for his wisdom, now the land could receive his wisdom. He prepared the world for his assembly. It's a preparation for the world. That's what the Talmud says. So now, I guess that relates to the fact that since on the third day of creation, God created the land. So this is preparing the land for revealing God's wisdom. That's what the Talmud says. Now, we're going to read the parak in Tehillim, and the big question is going to be, what does this chapter in Tehillim have anything to do with what the Talmud said? Or anything to do with about the creation of land. So let's read this parak in Tehillim. It's a short one. It's only 8 verses. Mizmor la'asaf Elokim nitzav badas kel bekarav Elokim yishpot. This is a Mizmor la'asaf. Hashem stands badas kel in the divine assembly bekarav Elokim yishpot. Among the divine beings bekarav Elokim yishpot. He judges. It's really bekarav Elohim here. It's not referring to God. It's referring to judges. That Hashem is around when there are judges. When there's judgment in the world, so then Hashem is also around. That's what it means. And we'll see that the rest of this chapter is all about judgment, about proper judgment.
Meaning human judges.
Human judgment, yeah. There is one commentator who says that Bekarav Elohim is referring to angels, to Malachim.
That's what I thought.
But the many take it to say that it's referring to judges, that in time of judgment, Hashem is around. for how long will it be that there's terrible judgment in the world, and that it's not fair, and that there's favoritism shown in the world to the wicked, and that the innocent are found guilty. That's what's found in verse 3 here. Shiftu dal v'yasam ani v'rach shitztiku. You should judge those who are poor and the orphans and those who have it hard in their lives. They should be judged properly. Why is it that we always favor those who are in positions of power instead of those who lack that? So then they're the ones that get ruined in cases of judgment. Paul to dal v'avion miyad rishayim hatzilu. Verse 4. You should rescue those who are needy. You should save them from those who are from the hands of the wicked. Lo yadu v'lo yavinu b'chashicha yishalachu yimotu kol mostei aretz. Lo yadu v'lo yavinu b'chashicha yishalachu. They don't know or understand by the fact that they're going in darkness. That
who is the they referring to?
They is referring to the judges.
Okay.
The judges don't know that they're in darkness. They're not judging properly. Yimotu kol mostei aretz. If there's corruption going on in the court system, so then yimotu kol mostei aretz, which I think is an essential verse here for the Song of Tuesday, that the foundations of the earth will fall apart. The foundations will just collapse. Yimotu kol mostei aretz, which we'll get to in a minute. Ani amarti elokim atem uvnei elyon kulchem. I have taken you, the judges, to be like gods. You judges are equivalent to a god. You're in a position of power. Ubnei Elyon Kulchem. And you are the children of Elyon, of those who are on high. Those are like princes on high. Achen ka'adam t'musun u'chad hasarim t'ipolu. But the truth is that you're flesh. You're like regular people who are going to die. If all we had were the judges to rely upon, so then we wouldn't be able to survive. So we say, Kuma Elokim Shafta Aretz, we ask Hashem to come and judge the land. Because you are the possession of all the nations are your possession, you're in charge of everything. Please, Hashem, come and be involved in the judgment process. So just to sum up what this is about. This is all about judgment and the corruption of judgment that's going on in the world. At least from verse 2 on. The first verse says that Hashem is involved in judgment. God is present in the judgment. Then it goes and it says that, but there's a lot of corruption. And if there's a lot of corruption, so then we end off by having a prayer to Hashem saying, come back and be involved in this world so that there is proper judgment going on in this world. That's basically the summary of this parak in Tehillim. Yes.
I just find it interesting that Tuesday it talks about judgment, whereas my understanding that Tuesday is kind of a day where if you have, say, elective surgery or a wedding, that's the day you want to have it on.
Why?
So
that's married on a Tuesday.
A lot of people get married on Tuesday and.
On Tuesday?
Yeah.
I figured in Israel because it was half a day of work.
On Tuesday, it's a half a day of work.
It used to be.
Not anymore.
Not anymore. Now they do Fridays only. Now a lot of people take Fridays off entirely.
Yeah, yeah, they take Fridays off.
But it used to be Tuesdays and Fridays half day work.
So
should have been Mondays and Thursdays.
But they work on Sunday, so Tuesday was like the midpoint. So I'm not sure. It's an interesting question. I have to look for the source for getting married on Tuesdays. I have to look at that source. So I'll try to get back to you about that. So but we'll see that it's about proper judgment. It's not about corruption of judgment. We'll analyze this and we'll see how the focus is really on how it's on both, but it's also on how great judgment could become. So the first question we have to ask is, what in the world does this have to do with the third day of creation?
That's my question.
This is all about judgment. What does it have to do with the third day of creation? So I would like to suggest as follows. What happened on the third day? The third day of creation, God created the land. Right? He dried the land. It wasn't just pure water. Right. But Hashem dried the land, so we have land now. So what does land represent? The fact, so now Hashem created a makom for the world to exist. That's essentially what he did. He created a place to now have living beings, which is what's going to happen in the future. So it's creation of a place. So if we try to think about what the creation of a place means, so the creation of a place is about creating something to allow other things to run and to function. It's the creation of a giving you the ability to create a society, to allow things to function. So I think what this Parak in Tehillim is doing, and also what the Gemara is hinting at, is that in order to have the world to function as a society, for us to exist and function normally, the only way to do that is by having the land. The land is essential. But really, it's about representing a place for everyone to live normally. And that requires proper judgment. Without proper judgment, so then the world could go crazy. You need to have a proper court system in order for everything to function normally. Without that, there are plenty of places in the world where we don't have that. I think like the studies show like half the world is living in governments of corruption. We happen to be lucky that we don't live in such places, but almost half of the world is living in places of corruption, and over there, the innocent are being completely slaughtered. Yeah, are being slaughtered, whether actually being slaughtered or they're just living terrible lives and nobody cares about them, or at least nobody who has power cares about them. And so without proper judgment, so then we cannot have, then there's no purpose of just having the land. What's the purpose of having the land if you cannot have proper judgment existing in the world?
It's interesting. Somebody I know who lectures worldwide in medicine recently lectured in Dubai and had never really met an Islamic community before and told me that he was absolutely appalled at what he discovered there. And it's interesting that Dubai has been trying to build out into the sea a picture of the world, and it's dissolving.
Oh, really? It's not holding up.
Actually, physically
dissolving. It's going back into the sea. It's settling.
So where do we have that actually? Where did that actually occur in history? Where there was no longer land.
Noah.
By Noah. Yeah. Why was there a Mabul?
Because of the behavior.
Because of the behavior. Because of the language is Hamas. That it was Hamas, which is
destruction.
It's destruction. It was a corruption of society.
Thank you.
The big problems there was just a pure corruption of society, which is maybe what Hamas is trying to do.
I'll pass that on.
Destruction is Hamas?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's what it means. Yeah.
Hamas actually means destruction.
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
In Hebrew. I thought it was
Hamas. So it's really the corruption of society. When there's a corrupt society, so then there's no reason to have the land. There's no reason to have the mabul is not just, you know, one form of a punishment as opposed to another. It wasn't just, you know, God could have chosen anything to destroy the world. He could have just had like everyone just die all of a sudden. That's not what Hashem did. Hashem specifically had a mabul. What did the mabul create? It removed any place for anything to exist. It's the removal of that space. That's what the mabul is. The mabul is the removal of that space. Space.
You have to have nothing before you can have something in order to have nothing again.
You have to have nothing before you have something. You're saying that nothing is the just the space itself.
Right. Like in physics, they argue about that, about whether nothing is something, because you have to have nothing in order to have something in order to have nothing.
Let's not go there today.
Okay.
I got the first two steps, but I don't know why you have to have nothing to have something to have nothing. Why do you have to have...
Because what's something if you don't have nothing to compare it
well,
to?
Well, it's
to compare it to. To compare it to. Okay,
yeah,
got it.
Base.
Yeah. No, I got it. Yeah, okay.
It's kind of talking like evil and good. You don't know what good is. Well, you don't know what good is unless you have evil to compare it to.
Not in Gan Eden.
Anyways, but that's the idea of the mabul. The mabul is a completely getting rid of the physical ability to exist. It's removal of that ability. It wasn't just complete destruction of and removal of human and animal life. That's not what it was. More than that. It was just removal of the earth. The earth is gone. And that's what the Mabul accomplished. And once you don't have that space, so then nothing could exist. And that's what's going on over here. That in order for the world to exist, we need to have a functioning society where there are rules set up and there are repercussions for your actions. And that's why we say this. That's why I believe we say this on Tuesday. Now we'll get into it and we'll see.
It's particularly appropriate for the parsha of the week this week.
For Yisro. Yeah. Because it's the beginning. This is next week is when we discuss a lot more. Next week is Mishpatim. That has a lot more. But the beginning of the Ten Commandments. Yeah. This is the very beginning of a just society. So Mizmor La'asof, and this is one of the reasons that we have in Shul, we have the prayer for the government. One of the reasons for the prayer for the government that we have is because in order to exist within society and within the broader society, we have to have a functioning government. We have to have a functioning and just government. And so that's one of the reasons why we say that prayer. So let's just go first at the first pasuk. The first pasuk is arguably the most important pasuk of this chapter in Tehillim. Mizmor La'asof Elokim Nitzav Ba'das Kel Bekarav Elohim Yishpot. Hashem stands Ba'das Kel, or perhaps Ba'das El Bekarav Elohim Yishpot. Hashem is standing with the judges. Hashem is standing with the judges, and He is amongst them when they judge. That's what the verse tells us. Hashem is standing with the judges. Now, it also refers to the judges themselves as God. The judges themselves are referred to as God. It's the same word that's used to refer to God. It's referring to God. That the word of Elohim is referring to power. Really, it's referring to power. And so, on the basic level, it's just like Hashem has power, so too these judges are in places of power. But I think there's an even closer connection between the two. The fact that Hashem is also, He's as if He's standing in the courtroom. This is what this verse is telling us. So why does Hashem have to stand in the courtroom? Why does He have to physically be there? Or as if He's physically there. Why does Hashem have to be there? There are multiple answers to this question.
To remind the judges of their moral responsibilities.
That's great. So one explanation that's given is Hashem is, you have to view it as though Hashem is there to remind the judges of their responsibility. That's a great explanation. By Shlomo, by the throne of Shlomo HaMelech. Shlomo was also a major judge. By his throne, when they describe his throne in Malachim Aleph, it's described as there are pictures of lions as you go up every step. I believe there were 12 steps. I could be wrong about that, but I believe there were 12 steps, and there were pictures of lions. And the Medrash says that the lions were there, both to scare the litigants, the lions came to life to scare the litigants and to scare Shlomo, to judge properly. So I'm not sure if it's taken literally or not, whether they actually popped out of their
stone.
But it was there as a form of intimidation to realize what you're getting yourself into, both the litigants and the judge. And so it's one explanation as to why Hashem is there, is that you have to realize, what's at stake here, that Hashem is watching over you. Any other explanations why Hashem might be there?
I was wondering this week for some reason, is Hashem inside each of us?
Hashem is not physical. I don't think so, no. Hashem is not physical.
Thank you.
So, when we're talking about when Hashem is there, it's just figuratively speaking. It's not. When we say Hashem is everywhere, it's a bit of a misguided term, because Hashem is everywhere. It's a longer discussion, but it's.
Is it to compare, sort of to attribute to the characteristics of Hashem being of Rachamim and
that He should be merciful.
Judge with a bit of with.
Okay, so that's an interesting idea that it's as if Hashem is there because you're supposed to use the same way Hashem judges us, so then we should also judge through compassion. It's an interesting idea. I would say that an extension of that idea, or parallel to that idea, would be that Hashem is there because there are multiple answers, but just to connect to this one, is that we're supposed to focus on the Torah values of judgment. That it's not just, we don't have any form of judgment. It's not like any legal system is the correct legal system.
We have
our own legal system. We have our own legal system of how to judge. And our legal system is the just legal system. You know, there are many different types of legal systems that exist in the world. Mm-hmm. But the one that is, we believe, is the ultimate true and just one is the one that the Torah gives us. That's not to say that we're not thankful for the one that we have in our own, you know, in our own government, but the one that we believe is 100% just is the Torah's legal system. And so Hashem is there to tell us, to remind us, we have to judge based on the Torah. In fact, there is a prohibition to go to secular courts if you have the ability to go to a Jewish religious court. You're supposed to, the first step is to try to go to a religious court if you could. If you can't, if for whatever reason you're not allowed to do that, so then you're allowed to go to a secular court. But the best option would for sure be to go to a Jewish religious court. That is a second explanation. A third explanation is that the judges need help from Hashem to judge. That in order for them to judge properly, they need to have what we call siyata dishmaya. They need to have help from Hashem. It's very hard to you know, you could get all the facts, you could try to get all the facts down, and at the end of the day there are going to be two different opinions going on when you have a court case, and they both are going to claim that they're right, and it's going to be very difficult to find what exactly happened. And also oftentimes two perspectives are two correct perspectives to a given situation, and not everything is black and white. And most of the time, things are gray, so it's very difficult to judge properly. And also, for a judge, our court systems have different numbers of judges. You could have three. There's different numbers of judges, but every single person, they always have a certain bias. Just when the person walks in, and just says hello to you, so that person said hello. The other person didn't say hello. So, you know, I'm going to favor that person. Just not even consciously, just subconsciously, I'm going to start acting towards people differently just based on initial interactions. It's just
first impressions.
Yeah, so it's just,
isn't it Hashem pronouncing the judgment?
So this is what it is. This is what it is.
He pronounces the judgment.
Yeah, so Hashem plays. Hashem is playing a role in the judgment. That's what's going on here. That assuming, but there's a condition here, as we're going to see later on. Assuming the judges are trying their best to create a system which is just and correct, so then Hashem will help them, and Hashem will ultimately be that judge. There's a fascinating story, which is quoted in multiple places. There's a rabbi, his name is the No de Behuda, Rabbi Cheskel Landau. His name is Rabbi Cheskel Landau. Actually, my son is indirectly named after him. I have a son named Cheskel. We believe that we come from him. That if we go back far enough, then we go back to him. And my grandfather's name was also Yecheskel, so my son was really named after my grandfather, but could also go all the way back to Yecheskel Landau.
Hanasi.
No, he's later. His Yecheskel Landau. He was in Prague, I believe.
Okay.
So when he was applying for the job, to go into be the rabbi in Prague. So there were a couple people in the community who really wanted to test them out. Like, this rabbi is coming into our community, let's see if he's the real deal. So they made up a very convoluted, crazy case. Like a very difficult case. And they asked him, like, what would you do with this case? But they made it up. They made up a case. So this guy was a genius. He was like an absolute genius. He wrote a ton. So he thought about it for a minute, and he's like, you know, it's not really coming to me. Give me some time. So he was spending a weekend there, right? This was just his visit. So he said, like, give me some time. Give me a week. I'll get back to you in a week. Let me think about it. So after the week, he comes to them, and he says that you made up the case. Like, this isn't a real case. They're like, how did you know? He's like, because if this was a real case and I was really trying to figure it out, Hashem would have helped me out. And I don't know.
Wow.
I don't know the answer. So it must be that this isn't a real case, and that there's no reason for Hashem to help me if it's not a real case.
Wow. Very good.
It's a very powerful story.
Yeah.
So the idea there is that there's help when a person's doing it for the right reasons. So then Hashem will help that person out. It's important. I'll get to the fourth reason for Hashem, why Hashem is there. The last reason why Hashem, to explain that I've seen why Hashem is present in the courtroom, is that when you have a court case, or when you make a decision, when you make a final decision, someone's going to be upset. Right? Even if you make a compromise, someone leaving is going to say, I was treated unfairly. When you have that court case, when they're going in, the vast majority of the time, they both think that they're right. They both think they're right. Well, that's the vast majority of the time. Rarely is it the case that the person knows that he's wrong and he's still showing up in court. I would assume the majority of the time is where they both think that they're right. Even if they did something wrong, they think they have good reasons for why they did it. Right? So when they leave, when you have the two litigants that leave, that they're going up against each other, so they're going to be upset with the judge. There's going to be somebody there who's upset with the judge. And so God is there to tell the judge, listen, it's as if Hashem is there to say, it's going to be difficult. You know, people are going to be upset with you, but I'm here to help you out. Hashem is saying, as if I'm here to help you out. You should judge properly. You do what the right thing is, and I will be there to quote it as if to back you up and to help you out. But you should judge fairly, even though somebody's going to be upset with what you did. And so that's the fourth reason why, potential reason why Hashem is, it's as if Hashem is in the courtroom. And now, practically, this Perek in Tehillim is to explain justice in the world, and that's the basis for society to exist. But this also is a lesson for each person. This is not just a lesson for the courtroom. Everyone is a judge in different situations. You know, we're all judges. We're all positions of picking and choosing, and we all are in those types of positions where we have to make the right call.
Particularly teachers.
Yeah, teachers.
In
yeah.
The public school system.
Well, I think all teachers. You don't have to be in the public school
maybe,
system.
Yeah.
And parents. I don't think it's specifically anybody. I think everybody is in a position of making right decisions, and you know, whatever. And oftentimes, when you make a decision, it's going to impact other people in negative ways as well. And so we're all in those positions, and we all have to keep in mind that just like Hashem is with a judge, so too Hashem is with us when we are those. We're not professionally a judge, but we are in those positions where.
Judge and jury.
Yeah, well, yeah. There's no jury in Judaism. There's no concept of a jury.
Yeah.
But also, if you get called for jury, so then for sure in that situation.
What about the Beit Din? I mean, that sort of.
But that was the judge. Meaning the judge and the jury is all the.
Board of judges.
There's no concept of jury in that, like the just regular citizens become,
right.
Help like they make the call.
They don't become. Okay.
Yeah, there's set appointed positions
right.
For the Beit Din. So we're all in these places. This happens, you know.
Why
on
is
a,
that?
On
is
a,
that, excuse me, like it, when the. Like the laws that we all live by in the Western world are pretty much based on the Judaic law system, that the code of law that.
Not exactly.
There's a lot of differences.
There's a lot of differences.
But it based like the starting point. I'm just saying. Like,
perhaps
I mean,
fundamental
law,
fundamental values
yeah,
are probably
the
same.
Stuff is
yeah,
why
the fundamental values are probably
in that way.
Are similar. Yeah.
Is it that? Somewhere long ago that they decided that we were not to be judged by our peers?
It's a new concept to be judged by. You're saying a concept of a jury? Is that what you're asking
about?
Yeah,
like
that is more of a modern concept than.
That has nothing to do with Tanakh.
That is a modern concept.
If it actually says something that, you know, you're not to go that way. Like, is there something that would.
Well, often the Torah says things in positive terms rather than negative.
Well, I personally think that the whole concept, the jury concept, I find to be very strange. But I'm not sure why we have to have, you know, your average person. Why don't we have people who are experts in law?
Well, that's why
just,
I'm not,
I don't really understand the whole concept to begin with. But
would know as opposed to taking yeah, I don't chances know. I don't with know. Groups.
I mean, in general, the concept as a whole, if that's not your profession, there's no reason for us to be judgmental of other people unless we have to make a decision, a practical decision. But beyond that, if we don't have to make a practical decision, so then there's no reason to be judgmental of what other people are doing, you know. But it's not necessarily like a positive characteristic to be judgmental. Sometimes we have to, because...
And we're reminded about that every day at the end of prayer, of Shachrit. Remember what happened to Miriam.
Yeah, exactly, yeah. So these ideas of Hashem being with us, that if we, it's important to keep in mind when we're in positions of just making certain calls that will impact multiple people, that, you know, Hashem, if you're doing it for the right reasons and you're trying to have the right motivation, so then Hashem is going to be with you. And even though certain people are going to be upset about it, so Hashem is still like, these concepts, they're important to keep in mind, that Hashem is still going to, Hashem's still going to be with you. Not, that doesn't mean that it's going to be easy, but it's a comforting thought to know that Hashem is constantly with you. And to have a just society doesn't just mean that the court system is just. It also means that between people outside of the court system, when we make our own calls, when we make our own decisions in life, so then that also requires every single person has that responsibility to act in a just and correct way. And if we don't do that, even if the court systems, you know, if we don't do that on a one-to-one basis, so then that also is going to ruin society. And so I don't think this is only referring to judges, but it's really referring to everybody, and that we all have that responsibility to maintain the world. This is what this chapter is all about, maintaining the world. That in order to allow the world to exist, we have our own responsibility to act in a just way. That's really the main purpose. This we'll try to go quickly through the rest of this, but that's really the main part. I wanted to get to these Gemaras. There are two passages in the Talmud. If you turn the page, this is really the source. They say that this is the source. The first passage says that, how do we know that Hashem is with us when we are in shul? It says because Elohim nitzav badas kel, that Hashem is with us when we're in an eda. An eda refers to a ten, when there are 10 people around. So that's how we know that Hashem is in a shul. And then it also explains, how do we know that Hashem is with 3 people who are judging? And it also quotes our first verse of Bekerev Elohim yishpot, that Hashem is with us. And so you can read it on your own. I'm not going to read it now, just because we don't have time, but it talks about Hashem being with us in various different situations. The bottom source here says that Hashem being with us also impacts the mindset of the judge. It says, V'yu ha-dayanim, this is in the last source here, V'yu ha-dayanim yodin es mihein danin, v'lefnei mihein danin umi asad lipare mehen, shnemar elokim nitov ba'das kel. The judges have to know whom they are judging, and before whom they are judging, and who will ultimately exact payment from them. So who is that referring to? Who's the whom they are judging?
The litigants.
The litigants. Yeah. But it's all referring to, it's all three are referring to Hashem. Because the litigants are created B'Tzelem Elohim. They're in the image of God. So whom are they judging? They're judging the children of God. Before whom are they judging? Who are they standing? They're not really the ones that make the final call. Before whom are they judging is referring to God. And ultimately, who will they pay exact punishment from? That's all.
God.
It's all three are referring to Hashem. That you have to, in your mind, you have to realize, who am I dealing with? I'm dealing with people who are created in the image of God.
Very scary to be a judge.
It's very scary to be a judge. Yeah. The unfortunate fact is that we're all judges. So.
Yeah.
But the strength to be a judge in a court, in a Beit Din. Whoa, the strength and the learning and the knowledge.
Yeah. No, it's very. So let's quickly go through the last verses, and then we'll stop. Sorry. Ad Masai Tishbidu Avel Fnei Rishonim Tisu Sela. So now it's questioning, until when are we gonna have corrupt judgment where the Rishonim, the wicked people, are the ones that benefit? Shiftu Dal V'Yasam Ani V'Rach Hitzdiku. It says that we should have a leaning towards those who lack any power, the orphans, the poor people. So those are the ones that lack power. So we should have a leaning towards them. So the truth is that there are contradictory verses about this. We also are not supposed to show favoritism towards them just because they're orphans. We're supposed to have exact judgment. What some of the commentators explain is that if we're really 50-50 and we don't know which way to go, so then we should just leave the money by them. There's no reason to take the money away from them. They have so little as it is, so then leave it by them. Some judges will want to favor specifically those who are poor, and that'll change, that'll mess with how they're going to really view the case. So it doesn't mean that you should always favor them. It means that if everything being equal, so then you should have a leaning towards them. Save the poor from the wicked. So I think that's the end of this verse. Yimotu komos de'aretz is exactly what we've been talking about until now, that the foundations of the world will fall apart with corrupt judgment. Ani amarti alokim atam b'nei elyon kulchem, and this is raising up the level of the judges to show how great the judges are. That you are elokim atam. It's like your God. It's like your God. U'vnei elyon kulchem, and you are children of people on high of nobility. Achen ka'adam t'musin u'chad asarim t'ipolu. Nevertheless, you also have to realize that you're like a regular. Man, no, these are referring to judges, not the Kohanim. And so then at the end off, we leave off with a tefillah, Kuma Elokim Shafta Aretz Ki Ata Tinecha B'Chol Hagoyim. Hashem, be involved in our judgment. You should be involved, help us out, so that we could have a just society. So hopefully we'll be able to say this on Tuesdays. This is at the very end of davening, but hopefully we'll be able to say this on Tuesdays, and it'll remind us of what in order to have a functioning society, what we have to do in our own lives, not just what judges have to do, professional judges, but what we have to do in our own lives.